Welcome, listener, to Show Me State of Mind, our podcast kind of created to go over some history of Missouri and mental health, specifically in Missouri. And we have a great show coming up. So again, welcome to Show Me State of Mind. All right. So welcome to Show Me State of Mind. It is my pleasure to welcome a special guest to our podcast today. They're always special, but this one's extra special to me. This gentleman is a mentor of mine. He taught me a lot about how to be a good boss and leader, how to work hard, how important showing up is to doing a good job, and how to maintain kind of a steady presence and grace and a good sense of humor, even during the most stressful times, and I should say, especially during those most stressful times. This guest is none other than Marty Druhl, now Sergeant of Arms at the Missouri Senate, but formerly the longtime director of the Senate Appropriations Staff and my boss. Welcome to the show, Marty.
Thank you, Brent, for having me.
Yeah, you bet. It's good to catch up and good to see you again. We don't get to see each other as much as we used to, but we're going to start about appropriation staff, kind of some of that, but I've always been fascinated, and some of your stories to me are just kind of wild, but I know you started with the state at like 12 years old. I think that is a little exaggeration, but kind of when did you start with the state of Missouri, and kind of tell me a little bit about what that was?
It wasn't 12. It was 15.
Oh my gosh, I was right. It was 15. Yeah. Holy cow.
I was a freshman in high school, and at the time, freshmen here in Jeff City went to where the Miller Performing Arts Center is. That was the ninth grade. And so I walked up after school up to the Capitol to the Division of Accounting and did paperwork, basically filed all the invoices and things. At that time, there were vaults in the Capitol that are still there, although they're not used as vaults anymore, but they're right across from the Senate hearing rooms are on the first floor.
Okay.
And so I was in charge of that vault area, and we had file cabinets. And
and that was like OA accounting, like the state's accounting.
That is what is now OA accounting. That was before the Reorganization Act of 74. But it was what is now a Division of Accounting. And a guy named Dennis Strader.
I remember that name.
Dennis worked in accounting for many years and then went over to the House as a doorkeeper.
Yeah.
To finish up. But Dennis hired me and so that's where I got started. And
so the vault was like an official open and shut vault that would store the state's records.
State's records, basically. And also the state's checks. The treasurer's office checks were there. And so I was in charge of maintaining the inventory of those checks and logging whenever the treasurer's office needed a box of checks.
I'll be darned.
And it was wild. A vault like a bank vault.
That's yeah.
Big doors. You had the big
wheel would shut it.
Yeah. I didn't have, they didn't give me the combination at 15.
You couldn't get in at 15.
No, but yeah. I could lock it, but I couldn't open it.
Yeah. So now remind me, like, there was a house side vault too, I think, someone turned into like an office or something.
Yeah, there's several vaults in the Capitol, not just where those two offices are. There's one on the second floor where close to where I think the retirement, Joint Committee on Retirement works.
So there are several little vaults in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Oh man, that's kind of wild. But it was one of the stories. What age were you? And maybe I'm dreaming this story, but if so, just humor me and make it up. But because I love the story. But remind me, did I hear right? You, what would the state do to fly you somewhere, or didn't they send you off with like a cashier's check or something?
Yeah. Like, that was a little later.
This back is in the, amazing this is, to me.
This was in the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
You know, at that
this
time.
This is before producer Megan was born. So that's fine. But yeah.
Most people. Yeah. but early 80s. So if you remember your history in the early 80s, interest rates were double digits. And so the state was earning some good money on the interest rates,
right,
by keeping, you know, the money in the bank. And so the idea was to save as much of our cash as we could and use the float. So the idea was, if at that time the state got paid once a month, so, and we had to remit our earnings taxes to the feds at the end of the month. So instead of sending that money to the Federal Reserve in St. Louis or Kansas City, the decision was to make, to send it off to another Federal Reserve branch that we could then use the, you know, take several days for that check to clear, so we'd
earn more interest.
Earn more interest. And so they chose Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky. Okay.
And they asked me if I would be willing to take this check and go to the Federal Reserve Bank and deposit it in the bank.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, sure. So, and I'll never forget, it was in April. It was, and April 30th was a Friday.
Uh-huh.
So I'd never been on a plane.
How old were you here?
I was 22.
22. Okay. Never from Jeff City. Never been on a plane yet.
23, 24.
So yeah.
Never been on a plane. So I, you know, they had it all figured out for me. You know, you're going to need this much for a cab to get to the Federal Reserve. You're going to need this much for parking at the airport.
So no credit, no state credit card.
There was no credit card.
Just cash they had.
I had to pay it and then get reimbursed with an expense account.
Okay.
So here I am, you know, barely making enough money to feed my family.
And you got to spend $200.
So I'm calculating how much money I need. So I have all that. I get to the airport. I'm on an Ozark Airlines. Yes, Ozark Airlines. So we're taking off, and this thing is shaking. I swear to God, I was scared to death.
Where'd you fly out of?
St. Louis.
So out of St. Louis, Ozark Air, Ozark tiny Air. Plane. It's not huge.
No, it's like
MD-9
or something, you know, McDonnell Douglas. Anyway, it was, but it was fine. We got there. What would have been good to know is that the first Saturday of May is the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, Kentucky. No. You so fly right into
I fly that. Right into this on that Friday, not knowing that, you know, they told me, oh, it's in, there won't be anybody there.
Yes.
Well, the thing was, I get there, and I had enough money to get a taxi to the Federal Reserve Bank. Yeah. I didn't have enough money to get back because with the Kentucky Derby being there, they jacked up the
every price. Was
didn't matter where you're roof. Going on a taxi, it was like $20-$30.
Yeah, today, you know, hundreds.
Yeah. So I say
no Uber, no Lyft.
I didn't have enough money to get back.
Oh,
so
no.
I got in and I'm carrying these two checks worth, and millions of dollars on these two checks.
Two checks, yeah. Millions of dollars, Marty Jewel.
Yeah. So I get in a taxi, and I've got 45 minutes to get to the bank. They have a 2 o'clock to 2:45 is the window to make this deposit.
Oh, God, so you don't have long.
So I get in the taxi. I get there. I'm making sure I know where I'm going because I figure I'm going to be walking back to the airport.
Yeah.
Because I had plenty of time to catch my flight
home. Coming home. Yeah. Even so if you have to walk.
I wasn't going to where I might have to.
Yeah.
So I'm paying attention to where I'm going. Get to the Federal Reserve, and there's a state representative from Kentucky there to meet me. Just they had set this up so this guy could kind of show me.
I'll be darned.
So I go into the Federal Reserve, and it's like a bank. There's a couple tellers there, and so I go up, I have a deposit slip, I give them these two checks. They take it like there's nothing. Then I have to make a call back into Jeff City, you know, using a payphone, you know, telling them that the deposit was,
I guess. This sounds extreme, like a real, like a true life drug deal kind of thing going down.
I'm sure the guys back in Jeff were nervous as heck.
Yeah, thinking that we may not get kid. Done.
Yeah. fortunately, the gentleman that was there from Kentucky offered to bring me back to the airport. I didn't have to ask, and I didn't have to walk. He just voluntarily took me back, and then I sat at the bar for the next 6 hours waiting for my
flight. At the airport?
Spending my last $3.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, did you do it again, though?
I did it again the next month.
Okay.
And it was much calmer, much easier.
Yeah.
And then after that, they hired a courier service to
Okay.
To do it. And I think the feds finally caught on after about 6 months and shut it down.
Shut that.
You're not doing
Can't do this float deal.
I think
for
they
another.
Went to, the courier went to Louisville and then they went to Little Rock. They,
oh, God.
Just this is the
craziest story.
But, yeah.
Oh, man. I love that story. And it reminds me, though, Marty, back when we, when you start out in these jobs, one of the first memories I have, you and I, we'll get to the Senate, but since we're on these funny stories about being broke, remember old, this guy who ran, Ron Kirchhoff ran the Senate for a lot of years, and he used to call me Conway Twitty because he couldn't remember Brent McGinney. So Conway Twitty rhymed with Brent McGinney, so he always remembered me as Conway Twitty. But we went to Chicago right after I started to a conference. And you're like, no, you buy everything and then you expense it out. And I'm like, well, how do I buy everything? Like, my credit card's maxed out. I have no cash, you know, and I think Marty helped me out on that. But yeah, it is hard when you have to expense it when you have no money.
Yeah.
Never easy. Okay. So I love, that's a great story. So then you kind of wander around the county world for a while, right? And then when did you come to the Senate? Did you work a lot of years or before the Senate, or how did that happen?
I worked about 11, 12 years in the county,
okay.
Various positions.
Out of high school, out of college.
Yeah. I was still going to college during my years at accounting, and, you know, they have, at least at that time, they had a reimbursement plan for people going to college. You could get reimbursed for your college tuition costs. And so that was very helpful for
wonderful.
Me. Yeah, it was very helpful to me. And I stuck around. So I think it was a win-win for both, uh-huh. both of us in that. But yeah, I got the bug over at the Senate wanting to work in the appropriations early on. And I applied a couple times and just didn't, it just didn't work out. And then just one day out of the blue in 94, Tim Dawson, who was the director at the time,
94,
called me up and just out of the blue said that they needed somebody, wanted to know if I'd come over.
Yeah.
And so
that was that.
I jumped at the chance and went there in February of 94.
Okay.
Was over in the Senate about 11 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. And that was so in 94. That was really getting close to term limits. But when you started, it was pre-term limits.
Right. It was pre-term limits. So still had all the long time.
Yeah. The bulls of the Senate or whatever we call them.
Yeah.
Who are some you remember? I always have my few I remember very well. Of course, some we worked on appropriations, sure. But others were just characters.
You know, Danny Staples, you got to remember Danny
Staples. Yeah, Danny, yeah.
He was a hoot.
Stories we can't tell on this podcast.
Yeah. And just think of the stories that we don't know
about. Yeah. All the things that even we don't know about. That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, for me and for you, we worked closely with the appropriations members and Senator Good, Senator Russell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Senator Gross were all the chairs when I was director, but even before that, you know, Norman Merrill was the chair.
That's right. North Missouri.
Right.
Senator Merrill.
Mike Leibauer from Texas County was chair.
Yeah. In 98, when I started, Leibauer was chair. I got hired in September. We might as well get to that. So I was 98.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been there about 4 years.
Right.
And I got hired in 98. Mike Leibauer was chair, I remember. And I guess November was the election. He lost that quickly to Sarah Steelman. Mm-hmm. I remember his line in the paper was, I didn't even win my own coffee group. He got beat. And that was really kind of the way
I think
the rural Democrats were moving, going away.
It was kind of the sign of the times that things were going to turn as far as who controlled the General Assembly.
Yeah.
And after Leibauer got defeated, then Senator Good was the chair. And
for
then
just a bit.
For a couple years. And then for a short time, the Senate was tied.
Yeah. Until special election. Until
that special election. So after that, then Senator Russell became chair.
Yeah. So 94, that would have been Carnahan. Was Carnahan governor then when you switched over? So, but when you started working at 15, it was like, I'm trying to remember the governors going back. You had Kit Bond back then and you had Ashcroft and
it was
back then.
Yeah, it was because Teasdale was like, yeah, it would have been Bond.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah. Kit Bond. Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. Long time senator, you bet. So then, and so in 98, you were, I think, on my interview team. I think it was you and Walt and Joe and the Senate staff. You guys just, that was such a fun crew. But I remember interviewing him, being like, this would be the greatest job, I think, and the greatest staff.
No, I remember that interview, Brent. I really do. Yeah. You'd worked at Maysville.
Like a little bitty town. Yeah, right. City administrator in Maysville.
Columbia.
Worked in the city there under Leonard Martin, was the city manager way back then, and worked under him. And yeah, and just, I remember being just like, I need a job. Like, I'm have a baby coming. I got to figure out how to pay. I actually need to grow up and get a real job. And saw the Senate in an ad. I think I literally saw it in a newspaper, maybe. And just applied.
At that time, that's how we did it.
Yeah. It just seems so random. But
well, you know, I've hired several people during my time at the Senate. And I always like to have kind of a rounded staff of different backgrounds, not all coming from another state agency. And you fit that bill perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, you were young, had enough experience, but it wasn't state experience, which was great.
Yeah.
Brought different ideas and perspectives in it.
Yep.
And so it was a great fit.
We had such a good, I remember laughing, somehow wrestling came up. And I remember my dad would always call it phony baloney. I don't know why, just that, but it came out in the interview, and then we got onto wrestling, and it was a fun interview. And I remember being like, well, I hope I get this job. And the Senate was different than the Capitol. I mean, we'll just be honest about it. I have a bunch of great stories about Tim Dawson was the director then, mm-hmm. I believe. And yep. Tim, I came in one time and I can't remember how it got brought up, but I said, Tim, do I have to pass a drug test or anything to start or whatever came up? And he said, no, you don't, Brent. And he said, but if you did and you passed, I'd be pretty upset with you or something, joking about it. Like, in a way, I was like, okay, this is a different kind of place. And then I think on a Thursday, if I remember the story right, I think I got buzzed into Tim's office, and I'm at the very front of I'm in the lowest seniority office, like way up at the front. And the director's office kind of more in the back, and get a little, back then they had the little conference phone deal, said, Brent, you come back here. And I'm like, oh no, what did I do? I've only been here 3 days. And so I go back, and Joe and Marty and Walt and Tim are back there with Bud Light, and they're like, do you want a Bud Light? And I'm like, okay, this is one of those tests, like what to do or not to do if you get called into a senator's office. And I'm like, that's fine. So I grab it and I open it and I don't drink it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to just see if this is the test. And they're all having sips of their Bud Light. I'm like, I'm not drinking it for a second here. And then I take a sip, fully expecting that there's a lesson. It was not a lesson. It's just a Thursday. But it was just a different kind of world and place, the Capitol was, I think, back then versus what it is today. And probably okay for the better, maybe.
So
depending on how you kind of view that. But anyway, yeah. And then one last one, I remember my dad came by to visit me. I wanted to know where I worked. He was living in Arkansas then, and he came up, and I think we shared a beer at the Capitol, and he's like, God, my son has made it. I can't believe this is it. We're sitting here in the state capitol having a Bud Light, and I think this is the greatest spot on earth. And after that, he always nicknamed me the governor. Like, how's the governor doing? Just because of having just such a fun time at the state capitol. But so I guess then, so 98, I come on board, and it wasn't long after that. We had maybe a year or two of good. In some ways, we ran into some pretty crappy budget years not too soon after that. And those weren't great times, but also it kind of developed a bit of a sense of camaraderie and like, we're going to make this budget, we're going to figure it out, and we're going to get this thing done.
Yeah. I mean, and Senator Good relied on staff a lot.
Yeah.
And there were some tough times. That was early 2000s. And Senator Good just relied on the staff and kind of gave us direction, but just pretty well laid it in our lap and told us to
we're going to have to figure it out, folks. Yeah. And how do we get it done?
Yeah. And so staff worked hard and wasn't easy, and things that we recommended to the committee were not things that we took lightly. And it was not.
I remember it was real people too.
Yeah.
Like, I remember feeling a lot of pressure that when you were looking at vacancies or you were looking, you really tried to be human.
Right.
And not do as little harm as you could, but also you had responsibility there to get it done. And I remember Wayne Good on the floor, didn't he say once, like, I'll vote for any tax increase you put in front of me, but it ain't passing. So we got to deal with the hand dealt.
That's
and
exactly.
And so, remember that? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the departments were great to work with too. They understood. They didn't like it. I don't think anybody really liked it, but it was just the reality. And so we got through that. And then later when Senator Russell became chair, we even had a tougher year that one
time. That's right. Really bad.
You know, we were given the budget after the House was finished, and that's when, you know, the mail truck stopped coming in and our taxes just tanked. And
yeah,
at that point, the Senate had to take charge and
draft an entirely new budget, basically, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think between Wayne Good and John Russell, when they retired from term limits, I think when we did that thing for them, the recognition was it 67 years combined,
something like that they've
been in the legislature for 67 years together, and talk about experience. They knew where all the bodies were buried.
I don't know that they were good friends, but they
respected the heck out of each other. Yes, I think
very
trusted
much.
Each other.
Trusted each other.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Imagine back in the day, like, it's not that way now as much, although I think in the Senate more so than the House, it's still at least an attempt at it, but they really co-chaired that group. Even when the Republicans kind of took over, John relied on Senator Good's advice and input, which is really kind of amazing.
And that can bring me to another story if you
want. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to name the senators because I just don't want to do that. But at that time, when Senator Russell was chair and Senator Good was really helping him and helped. You know, they relied on each other. I had a couple senators that didn't think Senator Russell was doing the right by what he is doing with the committee.
By including.
So I was called up to their office one midnight.
Oh my gosh.
And they asked me to draft floor subs for the budget.
Holy cow.
Which we've never done that before, but you know, found out what they wanted and where they were headed. And so I did that. I didn't tell any of the staff. I didn't tell you.
I don't.
Because if Senator Russell would have found out, he had a temper.
He could get mad and then felt terrible about it
real quick,
but he could get really mad. But
in this situation, I didn't want him to be mad at any of the staff because it was not a staff.
Yeah.
And you know, with our confidentiality, we couldn't tell him what was going on.
Uh-huh.
And so it was something I did on my own, just drafted these, had them ready. Fortunately, these two senators did not go through with their plan to hijack the budget. But that was one of those that would have been.
Man, that would have been.
That would have been.
Violated a lot of Senate tradition.
Yes, that would have been. That would have been something that if that would have gone.
Wow.
But fortunately, it did.
Yeah, I want to remind folks because it's so different today. And I have a lot of my peers and friends who, you know, we're getting a little long in the tooth. But like for new people going through budget now, it's so different than what it was. I mean, I moved where I live because of the Senate schedule because it was just brutal. But I want to put on record what Marty went through compared to what I even went through because the Senate would. Usually we'd start Monday afternoons and then meet at like 8. The night hearings would be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 8 p.m. start time. So they'd go have dinner. And then depending on the department, it could be 8 to 10, 8 to 11, 8 to midnight for 3 days. And then you on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning, usually we started at 8 a.m. because they would meet before the Senate went in at 10 a.m. So you'd get done at midnight, 11 or midnight, and then have to be back usually at 8 a.m. And so I had, say, six departments, not the big ones, but I had six smaller ones. But during those 2-3 weeks, you'd be there just, I mean, I wouldn't see my family for three right. days or 3.5 days. So then, but Marty, you had to be there for all the departments for all the hearings. So you did that from January through May, pretty much on that schedule. And I always remember being like, when my budgets were done, I was like, oh, thank God, you know, I can go home normal hour. And then poor Marty's like, nope, he's got to keep on going. And I was always just like, God, that is impossible to keep up. But I can imagine if you ever had comp time, we wouldn't have seen you from the entire summer.
That was, you know, I really enjoyed it. That's been my favorite job in Senate appropriation.
Yeah.
Of all the jobs that I've had.
Yeah.
It was really rewarding, challenging.
It was. Agreed.
I really enjoyed it. And the staff, you know, I mean, I compare the staff that we had to any staff.
Yeah.
And by far the best, I think.
Yeah, we had such a good group. And I think that it was hard work, challenging work, but I agree with you. It was some of the most rewarding work. I remember Virginia Young at one point. She was, if I'm remembering right, a longtime St. Louis Post-Dispatch mm-hmm. writer covering politics in Missouri. And I don't know if Wayne Good or Russell got her to come down, but someone sent her down her way.
Yeah, I remember her.
You remember that?
And she wrote a nice article.
She wrote a really nice article. I remember that.
I'm not sure what prompted that, who did that. She just came up to me one day and asked if we had some time one afternoon. And
uh-huh. Yeah, I thought that was really cool and kind of, I remember thinking, oh, I bet the house is mad, but it's okay. But you're right, it was unique. They were mad, but it was unique time where the Senate really had to take over and craft a budget, which was a unique in kind of the history of that. But yeah, and so for anyone who thinks, like, I hear them complain, like, oh, I had to be here one night till 10:30. I'm like, you have no idea. Give me a break, man. That's just one time. We used to be there for a long, long time. And another, maybe you just mentioned, this is another cool story. I've heard these stories before me, but I've witnessed it. And I think it's a little different now, although I think give a shout to the current Senate budget chair, Lincoln Huff, who, as I understand it, brings people in more one-on-one to talk about what they want and stuff.
Perfect. But yes.
What used to happen is the chairs and the minority members would get together. I've heard one story, if I recall this right, it's in the lore of appropriations. House Budget Chair Chris Kelly from Columbia and Senate Chair Wilson from Columbia played pool over some issue. And if whoever sunk the shot or won the game got their position. So that's not the best way of doing budget, but there are worse ways to negotiate, too.
Yeah, I've heard that story, too.
I don't know if it's true, but that was before me.
It was before me, too.
Okay.
But I've heard that story.
It could be.
It was a conference. It was during conference
committee, yeah.
And couldn't come to an agreement, and that's how they finally settled it.
That's right. Yeah. But like, I think it's important for folks to know how, like, if you think for years, we would sit, Marty and I and the staff, through meetings with the committee to really balance a budget that served as many interests as possible. And, you know, I think that's pretty cool that all those years they wanted feedback from all over the state. It really was what democracy should be about, is listening to people, listening to ag community, listening to cities, higher ed interests, you know, you name it, Medicaid, all those interests, and sit there in a room and really hash it out. And for the most part, I think it produced, you know, good results. It was a lot of hard work, but, you know, a lot of stuff people don't see, or you're just like, oh, this is all just politicians and blah, blah. No, these are folks that really were trying their best and working really hard and long hours to craft a budget.
I don't think the general public knows how many hours a lot of these elected officials put in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not obvious, but it really happens.
Yeah, I agree. And term limits, you and I agree on this. We always joke that term limits should be like the staff should choose. Appropriation staff should get the constitutional ability to choose, because we spent the most time with them. And some probably did deserve to get term limited, but generally I don't like them. And I think today what's happened is, you know, John Russell and Wayne Good, a lobbyist could come to them. They've heard all of it before. You're not fooling them on anything, and they could see through things. And you know, because they just had years of experience. Now I think lobbyists just have so much more relevance or influence because, yeah, you get so many new people and hell, that budget's, you know, what is it, $50 billion now? I don't know what it is. It's huge now. And to try to know all of it is just, you know, really tough for someone with, you know, 4 years of experience. It's just impossible to do that. So, and staffs become more, I think, more and more important. But so let's get into another funny thing. So I started in, if I remember, like September something of 98, my daughter was born on the 21st. So I'd maybe been there a week and then she's born. And so, you know, the Senate taught me a lot of lessons. One was go be with your kid. You know, I know we know you don't have vacation, but it's fine. Like, we'll go be with your kid. We'll negative you and then we'll catch up later. And I always have tried to be thoughtful of that, you know, you have a family and you have children and you have things that happen in your life. And we'd sometimes spend, this is just walk down memory lane, but like, it's hard for people to imagine if there were like, say, you know, 11,000 state employees and the House would want to do $250 a month pay increase. So you'd go through 11, not exactly 11,000 lines of a system, but let's say it's 8,000 lines and put whatever the governor did, let's zero that out and put 250 in, 250, 250. And you code that literally for a whole Saturday. And then the Senate would be like, we're going to go back to the governor. And so then we had to take out all the House stuff, 8,000 lines, and then put our, and so those would be like weekend jobs. Like we'd have to sit there and literally code that over a weekend. And I always remember bringing Gabby in for whatever reason. And then Walt might have a kid or others might bring in a kid, but it was very family oriented, I think. And I always appreciated, you know, you took over not long after I started as director, but kind of that's a lesson I've always learned is you got to be pro family. You know, otherwise it just doesn't. It doesn't work. Life doesn't work well if you don't have family. And so that was always Gabby kind of always, she really grew up in that office in a lot of ways. And she remembers it to this day. She? Oh yeah. It was really cool. And then the one time she, of course she's running because she had a lot of energy and she came running into my office, tripped and fell and smashed her head on the chair, had a big old knot and is screaming. And I'm like, oh my God, these guys are gonna kill me. But anyway, as always, Marty was always good about care, let me have her and we'll get her to calm down. So yeah, that was fun. And then yeah, that coding. And then like, so Department of Mental Health, this is a kind of a mental health topic, but you know, mental health has a commission form of government, and so it's a little different. But you spent a lot of years, did you ever do the mental health budget or just always help out when it got needed coverage, or, you know, just obviously as director, you knew all the issues, but I don't know if you ever actually did it.
I think I did that.
I thought you did a year or two before it transitioned. Right. So like Patty Henry might've been Keith Schaefer 1.0 or Dr. Wilson, maybe, yeah, or Dorn Dr. or Wilson. Dorn Shuffman, maybe one of those. Wilson.
Dorn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who you remember working with.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lane Larnador was the budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. I forgot that name. Yeah. I knew Patty Henry for the Alden's years as budget director. And there's another story. When you mentioned Senator Gross, before he was chair, remember he had the staff that go through the very detailed lines. Oh, yeah. Remember that year? And he'd say, hey, you have $50,000 here in supplies. You only spent two. Can we cut that supply line? Even though it kind of in total probably balanced out, but if you were lazy on how you bucketed your expenses, Gross was catching you. And so Patty Henry, I'll never forget, went through and spent, the story was, this is before I went to mental health, but she literally wrote notes and justification on every line in the entire mental health budget.
Is that right?
Every state facility, every program, and so he, in that hearing, I'll never forget, had like, say, he stopped after about five because she answered every question. A lot of departments would be like, we'd have to get back to you. She answered every single one. And he, at the end of the hearing, went up to her and said, I've never seen that before. And you clearly have an excellent grasp of your budget and compliments to you. And that was kind of a cool story that Patty deserved that because she spent a ton of time. She took that very serious. And I think, yeah, it's one of the reasons. I always said, like, I would never leave the Senate. I loved it so much. But there was like a couple places to go. Mental health and conservation were two that I thought had more stability than others. And I love hunting and fishing. And then mental health was kind of a just a place, a calling, so to speak. So those would be the only two spots to leave the Senate for. It was just too much fun over there to leave. But yeah, the other one, Marty, going way back, to try to balance a budget that big, it really was kind of old school methods back in the day. 10 key calculators and a piece of paper that was law, and then a system behind it that we kind of started up that was kind of a budgeting system in a way, but led into the accounting system and connected, I think.
Yeah.
But it was all kind of old school. Like when I started, I remember
budget notes and
budget notes and a calculator and a piece of paper. You you stapled the 10 key to your bill before you put it in the file, and it had to tie out and balance.
Right.
And that's just, it's funny to me looking back how the whole state's budget was a bunch of guys like us in the basement on 10 key calculators, making sure all of it kind of worked out.
And it did.
It did. It did.
And, you know, once they came up with the brass system, the budgeting system, which was really modeled after the Senate budget notes.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Because of how, and, you know, predates me, Tim Dawson and his crew really set that up. And then that's how, you know, it worked so well that the brass system was, although it was a computerized system, incorporated a lot of those, we had the notes, narrative and
core changes and new decision
items. Core changes all the different, you know, the governor's, department requests, governor's rec, house rec, senate rec.
Conference,
which is how our notes were set up.
It really did follow that, didn't it?
And if, you know, at that time we had two support staff that, we needed to type all that stuff up.
Oh God, we killed some trees in the day, didn't we?
We were under, you know, the time crunch because of the short turnaround time.
Yeah. You get out of conference or out of committee and you had to take them to the floor.
Right. They wanted the next day.
Next day. Basically. So you'd be there late getting all those things done and tied out. My first year I had Department of Revenue, which I think at that time was $4 billion. Now it's probably triple that, but just because it had all the taxes and all the different transfers, and I was off $1. I'll never forget it. I was like, is this kind of just, I'm good enough, right? Nope. Find the dollar. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I ran that 10 key over and over, finally found the $1, and then was able to tie it out and celebration kind of deal. But $1. Oh, man. Well, that's cool. And then tell me then, so you retire because you started very young working for the state. You retire a very young man. Your career's not over. You're enjoying retirement and all that. But you have your place. You love to travel. But, you know, you're like, well, I still got some work I can do. So did you take some time off before the Senate? Or did you kind of slide into the doorman kind of role? Because
I had decided to retire at the end of January of 2013.
Uh-huh.
And Terry Spieler called me up out of the blue.
Uh-huh.
And who was the Secretary of the Senate.
Yeah, long time Secretary of the Senate. Yeah.
You know, over the years, I had conversations about, you know, doorkeepers and stuff. And she just called up and said, hey, we have an opening. You want to come over and be a doorkeeper once you retire? So I retired, and my last day was a Friday. I went to work for the Senate the next Monday.
Oh, gosh. Is that right?
Yeah.
You didn't even turn in your ID, practically.
No. But back when I was 15, Brent, I just enjoyed the process, just kind of fell in love with the whole process. It's not an efficient process. But it works.
Yeah.
It's not always fun. It's not always nice and neat, but it works. And it's for me, it's all about the process. That's why I decided to do that.
Uh-huh. I've always heard, I don't know who to attribute the quote to, but like democracy is the worst form of government, but all the others, except for all the others.
Yeah.
Like it's not clean. It's not easy. It's tough, but it produces and the process works. So, So for the listener, a Senate doorman, like what do you do? Because I love those guys and have from all my career in the Senate, I thought they were wonderful people. But what's funny is when you see these retired guys doing this job, they also, almost all of them had amazing careers mm-hmm. before that, that you learned about and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. They did what?
And, yeah.
But yeah, so tell me, tell our listener what a dormant does.
Well,
what you can tell us. Yeah.
No, I can tell you everything.
Okay.
Okay. Not that much. But the Senate has rules when we're in session that no one can come on the floor of the Senate but senators. There's no staff allowed. No mm-hmm. members of the public can only sit on the side in the designated areas. And so we basically make sure that no one comes on the floor that's not supposed to be there. And then staff will send messages to and, back and forth between their senators. So we mm-hmm. make sure those messages are delivered. And lobbyists cannot come out on the floor at all. But they oftentimes come in and request to see a senator. Mm-hmm. So we'll run back and forth to see if that senator wants to come off to talk to
right.
a lobbyist or a constituent or whoever mm-hmm. it may be. And then we also do take up amendments to bills and, if there's subs on the floor, we'll take those up.
It's still kind of old school, isn't it?
It's very old school. Yeah, we don't have laptops.
Not supposed to have laptops. Not supposed to be on your phone much or whatever.
It's all a paper-driven process for us. And so there's a lot of amendments, a lot of, bills that get introduced that we have to take up to the Secretary of the Senate. And so mm-hmm. we're just there to basically help the senators do their job.
Yeah, yeah.
And then over the years, it's become, safety's always now kind of an issue. So we do have security that now supplement not just what we do, but they're around to help with that aspect.
Yeah.
But they're not allowed on the floor either. So.
Right. So the doormen are allowed.
We have, our guys are stationed at the doors. That's why they're called doormen, but they do more than just open the doors for people.
I want to talk to you about the Sergeant at Arms, but you mentioned Terry Spieler. So Marty knows this story well. This is the greatest walk down memory lane ever. But Marty, apparently, maybe I got this story wrong, but Marty always said, hey, Terry, if you want a reader, let me know. I'd love to read you have to have someone read the activities of the Senate. It's not the secretary. She's running the Senate, but in many ways from the dais with the senator who's running the floor. But the reader is the one who reads in amendments, says all the different things that are happening, or, mm-hmm. reads an amendment or resolution or whatever. So one day I get a call, I'll never forget it. And hey, Brent, this is Terry. Let's make Marty mad today. I'm like, what? And come up here. The reader's sick and I'm going to have you do it. And I was like, okay. So I was so nervous because I in a million years did not want to do it, but I knew apparently it was the joke that Marty wanted to do it. And so here Brent gets up there and I'm reading and oh God, I was so nervous and it was a funny day. I always appreciated Terry was wonderful and had been around for a long, long time. She started young too, I'm sure. But that was quite an honor to be a Senate reader for one day. Not a lot of people get to do that.
No.
But I think Marty heard me because it was secret. I wasn't supposed to tell him. And I went up and the first thing he hears is my voice reading in the morning stuff. And he probably was like, are you kidding me? Oh, Terry. Always looking to needle
you. That
yeah. That's right.
Still haven't gotten
to read. Oh, my God.
Must be in the
rule
book.
It's somewhere. In the rule. Don't let Marty read ever. So then, tell me about Sergeant of Arms. So that's kind of the head of the crew.
Right.
And so how did that, do they ask you or how's that happen?
Well, Bill Smith had been a sergeant. He was there for 20 years. And he had been a doorkeeper before that. And when Bill retired, kind of the same thing. I got a call with Patrick Baker, who's the Senate administrator.
Kind of the new
Christina Martin, at that time it was Adrian Krause.
Was the secretary.
Secretary of the Senate. Yeah. And they just asked if I'd be willing to do it. And really the sergeant at arms is just over the doorkeepers and makes the schedule and it's kind of their supervisor, if you will.
Okay.
Nothing more than that. It's
but their morning hearings you got to cover, and then
early on we covered all the hearings. Now the security staff has taken over covering the hearings.
Is that right? So they get the doors open and get them ready and all that.
The doorkeepers make sure the hearing rooms are all set up, you know, with water and witness forms, and it's ready to go. But once the hearing starts,
the coverage is security.
The security folks are in there too, because that's one of the most vulnerable places for some idiot to do something. Yeah.
So the sergeant at arms, I always, since there's probably in history not that many of you, I always hope there's a secret swearing in ceremony that you can't tell us about.
There is a swearing in.
Okay. Oh, great.
But it's
great.
Not a secret.
I was hoping for something really dark with candles.
Every 2 years, I have to be elected. I'm a sergeant at arms is an elected position
by the Senate.
By the Senate. Okay. The senators have to, both the sergeant at arms and the secretary of the Senate are elected officers
of the Senate. Oh, that's quite an honor.
Now, early on, it was more of a patronage system. So whoever the pro tem was usually picked the sergeant at arms.
Right.
But, that was way back when. We went back to 1911 after the fire, when the Capitol was destroyed. We have records. We don't have records left from before that, but you could go back and look, and every 2 years there'd be a new sergeant at arms. It's probably been 60s and 70s when it kind of changed, and it became a more of a
less permanent patronage and more just, I'll be.
So they asked me to do it, and I said I would. But you get sworn in the first day of session. Chief Justice swears you in.
I'll be. That's cool.
And then you're elected, and then you're sworn in.
And I remember watching, for the listener, this past few years, it's not been like you said, it's a process. It's produced a budget. It's produced good legislation, generally speaking, and all that stuff. Democracy's messy, but it works. But also there's been kind of some friction, I'll call it, on the floor, where there's been some tension and some senators raising their voices and accusing each other. And
yes,
there was one photo I remember of one senator and another kind of frustrated. You could see it in the photo. They're yelling at each other. And then Marty's standing behind him with his, official uniform on. And I just remember that's Marty really being a sergeant at arms. He's there to make sure that, hey, guys, we're going to have decorum.
Right.
Basically.
And that's it. It's decorum. And it's voices get loud, tensions get high.
Yeah.
And a lot of times just standing where they see you is all it takes.
And
they'll know that they're maybe getting a little
extra attention, so to speak. Or
I've never had to break a fight up.
No.
I mean, there have been times when we've pulled a couple senators into another room so they can yell at each other in that room instead of out on the floor, which,
right.
And that's fine. They can yell at each other.
There you go.
But, there's.
I always remember, it does get heated when Marty and I were on the side gallery once, or where the staff could sit. And I remember way back, Ronnie DePasco and Peter Kinder just yelling at each other. And then they come walking over by us, and Peter said to Ronnie, we need to have a glass of wine. And Ronnie's like, yes, we do. And they immediately walked into Ronnie's office, sat down and talked and cooled off, and actually got to what was the matter, what they felt offended them, or whatever the issue was. But I have a ton of stories like that where Wayne Good, and remember Senator Caskey, he was another giant of the Senate, and he always would say, what was his saying? I love so much. The most dangerous place in America is between a dollar bill and a school superintendent. he had so many great lines like that.
Caskey was one of a kind.
Oh, he was one of a kind, no doubt about it. Well, Marty, we've kept you long enough. Thanks for being with us and sharing your story. I love the stuff of flying and having no money in Louisville. That's during the Derby. He couldn't even enjoy the Derby. He had not $1 left. It's just a great story. But thanks for being here. And I hope for the listeners, the folks that have worked with Marty over the years, have been some of his employees over the years, have gone on to be state budget director, leaders of associations, leaders of state departments. And so, Marty, I hope you know your career mattered a great deal for the people of Missouri, and you've really had a huge impact, me personally, but, you know, for the whole state with what you did. So it's a great career, and appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us.
Thanks for those kind words. Yeah, I appreciate it.
You bet. All right. Yeah. Thank you. See you, Marty.